Rush into Old Navy today for up to 50% off store-wide. Get dresses from $15 for women, $12 for girls, plus up to 75% off clearance for the whole family right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 10/16 to 10/20, select styles only.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, brought to you by Fear the Sword and the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I am Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com and The Step Back. Today, it's August 8th, and we are here to talk more about Josh Jackson and the Phoenix Suns. Brendan Kleene, a fantastic writer for The Step Back and Bright Side of the Sun, is today's guest. And Brendan and I got into Josh Jackson, Dragan Bender, what the Suns could offer, why the Suns might not be really willing to make a deal. I think it's a really, really informative discussion. And it's a perspective I hadn't really thought about until I talked to Brendan. And if you're looking for more on the Suns, and I know that's a team a lot of you think makes sense. It's a team I've openly said on this podcast I think makes a lot of sense. There's also an episode of the Limited Upside podcast, which is hosted by Mike Prada and Ben Epstein, that features two contributors from Bright Side of the Sun. That's SB Nation's Phoenix Suns blog. And that podcast episode covers the Suns, something like 20 minutes about on the Kyrie trade, and you'll get a good inclination from that fan base, from that team's perspective on why they don't think a deal makes sense. So consider those, consider this, and I hope you guys think a little bit more about this deal. Another Cavs news, new jerseys are out, just two so far. There is a white one that I think is really nice. There is a maroon one that I think is not quite as nice, but two jersey options there. I'm going to have a review of that up on Facebook Live when you're listening to this, and on the site, you can check that out as well. Also, David Griffin, remember him, was on The Jump on ESPN The Jump with Dave McMenamin and Aminel Hassan, and he talked about Kyrie, said he believes he'll be traded, talked about why Kyrie might want to leave. Also had a very, very telling quote, in my opinion, about Kyrie and Kyrie's willingness to, or ability to, take control of a team. Griffin's quote, as transcribed by a friend of the pod, Greg Schwartz, was, "I don't think Kyrie's figured out how to carry the mantle of a team and actually win games in that environment." That environment being the highest levels of the league, without LeBron James. So, maybe other teams see that. They see the numbers. We see just how it looks on the court. Maybe that's playing a part of how teams are evaluating Kyrie. That's certainly something I think Griffin's whole appearance on the show was rather interesting. He talked about what it's like jamming for LeBron, Kyrie, a lot of Kyrie, and a variety of other things that I think it was good to hear from Griff and get his take as well. You can note this on the site. It's like 2 days now. Kobe Altman did an interview where he talked about everything but Kyrie, but it was kind of an interesting look into Altman. Did it with a radio station up in Vermont by where he went to college. So that's what's going on today. Today's episode, again, Brendan Kleene of The Step Back and Bright Side of the Sun is the guest, and we'll have more later this week. Not sure if it'll be Wednesday or Thursday, but you'll have more pods this week and more content over for this short as well. Hope you guys enjoy. Have a great Tuesday.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
Hardship. My grandmother would go through it every month to pay her insurance bill. First, she would handwrite a paper check in cursive. Then, using her own tongue, she would wet a stamp for an envelope. Today, however, we need not weary our hands and tongues. Today, we can pay our GEICO bill with the GEICO app. Away with hardship, in with bill pay on the GEICO app. Thank you.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So
this is a really interesting discussion with the Suns, just because I can understand from their side why they wouldn't want to pull a trigger on a Kyrie Irving deal. You know, I listened to the Limited Upside pod with about the Suns, and I've like, read about them a little bit in researching this, and it's a very interesting decision for them because, like, yeah, you could argue that Kyrie isn't too old for their core, but are you capping yourself out with a Lillard, McCollum, Southwest? What are you exactly doing here? And do you want to give up Josh Jackson and Eric Bledsoe, who is very good, to do this? What about this? What about Kyrie do you think, let's just say this, would actually appeal to the Suns? And then on the same note, what do you think would maybe keep the Suns from not wanting to do a deal for Kyrie?
I mean, I think Kyrie's exciting for all the reasons that, you know, everyone kind of knows about. And the Suns, it's really only been maybe the past season, or you maybe include last summer, that they've been buying into this idea of, you know, hashtag the timeline and that sort of mindset. Fans and the organization both. I don't really think that the idea of sticking with these young players was on anybody's mind until, you know, maybe last summer. So I think they're still in the need for an exciting young player like that, and it doesn't get much more exciting than Kyrie Irving. And, you know, just watching, I'm sure if they had interest in him at any point in the past, watching him do what he's done the past several seasons with LeBron and in the playoffs and into the finals every year, continuing to do what he's capable of in the, at the highest level like that, it's hard to find a player who fits that, you know, exciting. This is a team that hasn't made the playoffs since Steve Nash's, like, second or third to last season. That Western Conference Finals appearance in 2010 was the last time they were in the playoffs. They need something, and it doesn't get, like I said, much more exciting, something you can sell to the fans than that. On the other hand, the reasons for not trading for him are pretty well documented as well. I mean, you're obviously, there's only 2 years left on his deal. You'd be mortgaging. None of the players that you'd be trading have that few years left, even as rookies. And then you're talking about three or four more on top of it when they sign their next contract, or five if it's, you know, somebody like Devin Booker. So it's just a pretty big bet that not only are you going to get a lot out of Kyrie for those two seasons, but you're also really hoping that you're going to get him for another four or five after. So it's just something that, you know, because there's so many unknowns with all of these young players, you're not, besides Booker, really sure what any of these guys are, and you are sure what Irving is, but it's a pretty impossible math problem to solve when you're trying to guess what that will look like in 2 years.
Yeah, that's an interesting question there as well. Let's start with this timeline. It's not like they are... It's different than the process, obviously, but it's not like they are brimming with guaranteed higher upside guys. Like, I mean, like, I don't think it's unfair to say that Booker or Bender or Josh Jackson or any of these guys, like, could be as good as what Ben Simmons or Embiid could be. Like, I think that's a fair assessment. Let's say Devin Booker is as good as he possibly could be, is that a better player than Kyrie?
I don't think it is. I mean, I think that might just be the idea of, you know, preferring a playmaker over a scorer in general, because I think whatever Booker's ceiling as an offensive player, even if it's like you're saying, he reaches his absolute peak, is that really much better than the player that Irving already is as a pure scorer? You know, are you going to become a better shooter or a better creator of, you know, shots than Irving already is? Probably not. That's about as good as it gets. And then, you know, you can debate about what Kyrie brings as a passer, but obviously I think we can all agree he's much better than anything we've seen from Booker so far. So even if Booker were to reach his peak as a scorer, you're still missing a whole chunk of the game in Kyrie's passing. I mean, he still plays point guard whether LeBron has the ball or not. That's still, we don't argue about that being his position for good reason. That guy's, you know, still a distributor and a playmaker better than any of the two guards in the league.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think one of the things that intrigues me about... let's just... We'll get to them in that, what I'm about to say in a minute. But One of the reasons I think Phoenix does just kind of make sense is sort of what you're hitting on. It's like Kyrie probably could is might end up being better right now, and what he if, especially if you have him for 2 years, it could sell him on Phoenix, which is something we need to talk about too. But it's something that I think he could if he's better. Like it's almost like you have to try to take a gamble on that. At the same time, what you're talking about with the control of Booker, the control of Josh Jackson, the control of all these other guys, like if you mess that up at the wrong time, like there's a time to cash in your chips. Like, is now necessarily the right time? Like, and if you're the Suns, like we know that they're unwilling to put in Josh Jackson into a deal right now. That could change. It could not. I mean, it could very well not change, but. Do you kind of agree that they're taking the right approach? Do you think they are taking the right approach to how they're handling this summer and not saying right away, here's Jackson Bledsoe, first-round pick, or, like, some version of that? Because, like, I do think that if they offered that, the Cavs would say yes pretty instantly. But it just seems like that's, like, the threshold we haven't hit yet.
Well, here's the thing. So I think if the team's being honest about their priorities, and like I said, this is pretty a fairly new development in the way that the organization's looking at how they're going to compete, building three young players and really buying into the draft and seeing what they can do with a roster that has no real veteran leading the way. That's not really something that they've ever tried to do. I mean, obviously, Tyson Chandler is still on the roster making quite a bit of money, and Jared Dudley the same. But all in all, they're really going to be playing the majority of their minutes with players under 23 years old next season. So if they're being honest that that's really truly how they want to continue on, then I think that they're the right to keep Jackson and really not budge on that. But if that's just a game that they're playing publicly, things that they're saying to, because I mean, like it or not, that they lost a bunch of games and the only thing they have to show for it are these young players. So if you consistently are feeding your fans a message of, we're going to get that player soon, you know, pay attention in free agency because, you know, that guy's coming and all that, and you keep failing, then, you know, you're just disappointing your fans over and over. They have no choice but to make those players the priority. And if that's what they really want to do, then I think it makes sense. Otherwise, you know, if they just go back to what the momentum had been previously, which is every summer they're in the running for these top guys, getting meetings with LaMarcus Aldridge. And, you know, even up to this summer, they were supposed to hold meetings with Blake Griffin and Paul Millsap and kind of bailed at the last second, whether those actually were real or not. It's still not really gone away. They clearly want a player like this. So it's something we can't know. I personally think that these young players are exciting, and I would hate to see really any of them leave in a package. I understand the value of a player like Irving, and they're going to have to, but overall, I'm not excited enough about the prospects of this working out that I'm really willing to budge on a player as talented as some of the ones they've collected.
So let's talk about what the Suns would be with Kyrie, because this is one of the reasons that I don't know if a deal for them makes sense. If you say we're going to deal Kyrie Irving for Jeff Jackson, a pick, and but let's just say, like, this is that deal that we've talked about, or if it's Dudley instead of the pick, and Bledsoe, and, like, Dudley instead of the pick, and, like, some version of that, maybe Shumpert goes the other way. Something, like, along those lines. It's not like they're necessarily a playoff team next year.
No, I don't think so.
Like, if we're looking at the teams in the West, and some of this, frankly, is shaded by I mean, like, the Warriors, you shade it, so it's like what's the point in some ways, right? Like, that's why we've heard that 2020 we've heard that 2020 like line from Sarver, I think, that he said, like, we'll be ready by 2020.
Yeah, and in Ryan McDonough's contract was just extended through that exact season, so that's definitely the end point that they're looking at,
right? So if you look at the West from last year, this is the playoff teams in the West from last year: Golden State, obviously, the Spurs, the Rockets, the Clippers, the Jazz, the Thunder, the Grizzlies, the Blazers. Right on the edge of that, you have the Nuggets right outside of it, the Pelicans and the Mavs a little bit farther back, but teams like the Wolves could hop up as well. Maybe the Lakers are surprising better. The Suns are the worst team in the West last year. 24 wins, 43 games back of the Warriors. Even to get to the 8 seed, they're 27 games back, if I can do mental math right now. If you look at playoff teams in the West, Golden State probably maybe got better, which is absurd to think about. The Spurs, there's the Spurs. Like, they might not be great, you know, like there's some problems there, but they're the Spurs. They're going to be in the playoffs. The Rockets probably got better, like, functionally. As long as, like, the Chris Paul stuff works, they're going to be fine. The Clippers got worse, but, like, they're still good. Like, they're still going to be solid, especially if Blake has a really good year. The Jazz, you know, are going to take a step back because they have Hayward, but is it, does that drop them below the Suns? I don't know. The Thunder got Paul George. Like, they're probably going to be better. The Grizzlies are retooling. We'll see what happens with Jermichael Green. Lost Zebo. Might lose Tony Allen. Maybe they're roughly the same because they still have their two best players. Portland is Portland. They cleared some salary, yada, yada, yada. The Nuggets are probably going to be a little better. They get Paul Millsap. Jokic is going to have a full year to be a starter. Maybe the Pelicans figure it out with Boogie and Anthony Davis. The Mavs are the Mavs. The Wolves are probably going to get better just because they're the Wolves. Like, they got Jimmy Butler. They have Wiggins. They have Towns. Like, they should be better. I just don't, like, looking at that and just thinking about all those teams, if there's maybe two playoff spots that open, I don't know if the Suns with Kyrie, like a starting five of Kyrie, you know, Devin Booker, like Bender, I got, like, whoever would start, I don't know if that gets them to, like, a playoff seed. And, like, then as I think about it, like, what's, yes, Kyrie maybe sells you tickets and jerseys, and he gets you Nike exposure. Is that, like, enough to justify trading someone who could be really good on a playoff team for you in 3 years? Like, that's just, I think, the core question here.
Yeah, I think another part that's interesting too is the roster you're talking about is obviously the one the Suns are stuck with now, because just in the same way that the conversation that Irving had with ownership kind of hamstrung the Cavs' summer plans, it did the same for any team that's trying to acquire him, because unless he fits perfectly into the roster you already have, then you'd like to maybe do some maneuvering, add some players that maybe fit a little better with his style and move on from there. But you can't now. It's August 7th. There's no real players available that are going to be game changers. Trade market's pretty much done, except for this one lingering conversation with Irving. So it's like, yeah, I agree that the roster's too young. It doesn't really make sense to put him on it, considering the way that they usually play. Just overall, I don't think that he himself, just putting him in Eric Bledsoe's place. And Eric Bledsoe had a pretty strong season last year. He played about as well as he possibly could have, considering the team around him and the just the situation in general, that weird Sun season where he got shut down and was missing, you know, being rested and not really having a consistent group around him to build with. And I don't think Irving's really going to be a tremendous upgrade with the roster that's in place, because, like I said, nobody's even 25 on this team. These aren't players that are ready for that step. And so really, that's why I keep going back to, more than most teams, I think if the Nuggets were to land Irving, that's a roster that's, like you just said, going to compete this year. That would just be another upgrade for them. It'd be, you know, they already have a point guard, but, you know, Moody is a question mark and Murray's a question mark. If you put Irving in there, now they have Millsap and Irving and Jokic, and that's just maybe adding wins to their... If the Suns were to get him, it's like completely refiguring your whole puzzle and expecting a lot more suddenly than these players were expecting to, or really are. Napa
Know How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Probably capable of.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point too. It's not in any way necessarily a perfect choice for, like, any team. Like, I think, you know, the Nuggets, you're losing something, but, like, you could sell yourself on it. And that's just kind of what I wonder. And I think it's, like, actually sort of pragmatic on the Suns' part. It's everything you're saying, I think, makes a lot of sense. The one deal we've heard that they would do for Kyrie right now would be Bender, a pick, and Bledsoe. That might be a little low for what the Cavs would accept, I think, at least right now, at least as before we get into the season and that awkwardness starts.
Do you think if it was their own pick and not the Miami pick, the Cavs would do it?
They might, you know, because if it's that number, if it's their pick and you think they're going to be bad again in that draft next year, is supposed to be good, I think. I don't know. I guess like I know, like I know, like there's like two guys that people that I know that like the draft love, when it's like Michael Porter, who am I beginning his name
Luka
wrong?
Doncic.
And what Doncic? And yeah, Doncic. Like those are like two guys that people love, and if you love them, like that makes sense, you know, like if you think they're great, like that would make sense, but if you don't. You know, like, if you don't love those guys, then, or, like, you don't think the Suns are going to be bad enough where you get them, like, is that ends up being a problem as well. Let's compare it to what else we know is out there. Let's say Winslow, Dragic, some of the other things hypothetically teams could offer. Sell me on Bender, a pick, that Miami pick in particular, and Eric Bledsoe being a better offer for the Cavs than what else is already out there.
So the first thing is obviously Bledsoe, which is, I mean, every Twitter trade machine rumor that goes around always has Bledsoe going to the Cavs, it seems like, because, I mean, I think the agency stuff is a little overblown. I don't really think that there's any motivation on agents' parts to have all their players play for the same team. I think it's coincidental that the Cavs happen to have a lot of them, considering the LeBron and Rich Paul connection, but I don't understand why if I'm... in the same management group as another player that I'm desperate to go just play with them for that reason alone. I think he makes sense for basketball reasons. And maybe it makes it a little easier to talk to the agent if you already have that familiarity. But I think he just makes sense playing next to LeBron. And if you're looking for a change of pace from what you've been getting from Kyrie, if you have that opportunity, which they do, having, you know, being that Bledsoe's 27 and, you know, if you're worried about Kyrie fitting with the Suns timeline, I think it's pretty obvious that Bledsoe wouldn't, being that age already and on the tail end of this contract. So I think Bledsoe might make sense there. I think that's part of it. He's the best, you know, what they've been looking for, I guess, reportedly, is a starter and picks and young prospects. So you're fulfilling probably the best chance that they have at that starter piece is Bledsoe. I haven't heard anyone, you know, Dragic is a good player, but I think just as far as different than Kyrie and maybe a little more defensive minded, Bledsoe's definitely going to get you further in that regard. I don't know besides that. I obviously understand the qualms with Bender because Suns fans are going through the same thing. We have no idea what he is or what he will be or what, you know, he could bring to the Cavs, because we don't really even have a gauge of what he was bringing to the Suns. He played less than 600 minutes last season. And then the pick is just a toss-up. Who knows how good Miami will be? They had the most fluky season I've ever seen last year. So, you know, I think it all kind of hinges on Bledsoe, but that's clearly not enough on its own.
Yeah, I think the reason they don't do this, because I just don't know if the Cavs are the team to develop Bender.
I think he fits with LeBron better than a lot of people are saying, but
it's not LeBron that makes me say that, for what it's worth. It's just the Cavs.
It's just the Cavs. Yeah, I get that. I mean, he's a very raw player who is going to need, I don't even think he has an idea of what position he'd best be playing at, and I don't know. I agree. I don't think we've seen any sort of craziness like that from the Cavs. But, I mean,
especially, like, I don't think that the fit against LeBron and, like, developing alongside LeBron would be, like, bad for him necessarily. As long as LeBron doesn't, like, give up on him. Which is just, like, would be an interesting question. I just don't, like, if you're trying to be the team that figures out what he is up front. Like, is it, like, are you actually able to maximize what he is in a year where you are trying to also sell LeBron and staying? Like, that's just kind of what I wonder. And that's why, like, Josh Jackson to me, not just because he's probably a better, he is a better prospect. Like, I don't know if that's really, as someone who watches like so little college basketball, that's just like what I'm guessing. He's rated as a better prospect based on everything I've read.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, do you think Jackson, I mean, I understand you're saying I didn't watch a ton of Kansas basketball last season either, but just based on what you have seen or what you know, do you think Josh Jackson would be playing in the playoffs next year? Like, are either one of them really going to be something that has a tangible impact on their success next year?
This is why I think Josh Jackson could actually play a role. And this is the same logic I use for Justice Winslow, who I know has NBA experience. So it's not like a perfect comp. But both those guys do something well, and they should be able to do it well from day one, and that's defend. They're able to go out and defend guys, and maybe throwing Johnson on KD is like too much. That's why I think like Winslow like could actually be more attractive in the short term if he's healthy, because he could probably like defend at that high level next year if you ask him to. Jackson might get overwhelmed by that, but if you throw him out in the playoffs, you can have him probably chase around Clay. You can have him chase around somebody, at least have him try to do it in a way that no one else on the roster can, and he's younger. He's gonna mold well with LeBron. Like, that's kind of what I think. If like you, if you are trying to develop him and have him plug in and play next year, what he does to me makes more direct sense than Bender, who's sort of figuring it out. Whereas Jackson, it's like, okay, yes, he's a Swiss Army knife, and yes, he can defend. This is how we're going to use him and have him develop his offense in addition to this. Like, I think it's just easier to figure out what he would do in the context of LeBron than it is Bender. Not saying Bender couldn't, but like also the upside for Jackson's higher. Like, I don't know how good he could be. I just don't. But I also just, it just like, based on what I saw of Bender, based on what I've read about Jackson, it just seems like he has the potential to be something beyond that. And he just seems like, if you are going to have to rebuild next summer, he seems like a more stable cornerstone in a new era than a Bender would be.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it, part of it too is just the fact that he's a wing. I mean, you saw, I mean, you can just look at the Cavs. So since LeBron's come back, that's that player type of what Bender, you know, a stretch 4 or 5 kind of player. They needed that when LeBron got back, and they went and got Channing Frye. They've needed a wing like Jackson the whole time as well. And the best they've been able to do is Shumpert and Green. That just, that right there shows how difficult it is to get these two types of players. I think if they really wanted somebody like Bender, if they, you know, had that type of guy in mind, they don't need to go get Bender in this deal. They can be more, they can wait it out a little bit better, a little bit longer. I don't think Bender is like a can't miss guy in that way. Whereas I do think you're right that Jackson, even though we haven't seen him play in the NBA yet, just the type of player he is and the tools he has, those are just way more valuable.
Yeah, I think you're, like, I think the wing aspect of that is 100% correct. What do you think could prompt the Suns to up their offer to include Jackson?
I mean, I can't really...
I think there are two scenarios where it happens.
Go ahead, you tell me, because I don't know. I don't have a gauge on that.
This is just hypothetical shot in the dark, and I'm sort of stealing this from Mike Prada on Limited Upside, but it's, one, they're good. They have a hot streak to start the year. And they're like, okay, Sarver is like, yeah, or like McDonough's like, okay, like, we're just gonna pull the trigger on this and go for it. We think we can make the playoffs if we get Kyrie. That's one. Number two, if ticket sales, like, if that's something that does come into their mind, and I don't know, if you're like saying like we're struggling to get attention to this timeline besides our hardcore fans, Kyrie is like a fix to that while also being justifiably like a good player. Like, those are the two things that make me think you do it. I don't think either of those things make sense for them to do it now, which is something that's...
Yeah, okay, so I see. I didn't realize you meant like during the season as well.
Yeah.
One thing I will add with the sales thing, I mean, obviously that kind of stuff is almost impossible to know for the most part. The one thing I will say, though, is in the press conference that Sarver and McDonough announced his extension and announced the hiring of James Jones, which, I mean, I don't know how much it matters, but the fact that James Jones is involved, I think, might have something to do, even if it's just a small part, in why the Suns have kept their attention on for so long now.
That, to me, is one of the most fascinating things I don't know how to quantify in this, because exactly. If there's anyone who knows the direct value of Kyrie Irving and what he would bring to that organization, James Jones would. He's been in the locker room with Kyrie for 3 years. He's been to three finals with Kyrie. And it's like, so it's like... Like, you would think and we don't know. Like, I can't say I know this. I don't. You can't say you know this. We don't know, like, what James Jones is saying, but you think if he was like, yes, like, this is a franchise guy that we can get him for this, do it, you think he would have said something. Or, like, that might have, like, because it seems like he has a very large role in that front office. I just don't know, like, how to quantify that or what that means.
It's just a matter of, you know, he just got hired, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago? I mean, they've probably been in talks the whole summer. I'm sure he's been in, had conversations with these people. But maybe it's just a matter of, it's the summer, and, you know, maybe once James gets in the building and he's talking to these guys every day, and he obviously knows the Kyrie part of the equation right now. He has as good a handle on Kyrie and his temperament and his value and his skill set and all of that than almost anybody in the league. But maybe it's just a matter of, you know, there's 15 guys in the Suns locker room that are going to be, just by matter of math, they're going to be a bigger part of it. Maybe he just doesn't have a gauge on that. And that's part of what they're waiting out, is seeing what they have once camp opens and, you know, what this group looks like. It's not that much different than last year, but, you know, everybody had the summer to get better. And that brings me to the one thing, now that I'm on the track of once the season starts, the one thing I could think of, and he's a guy that's eligible for extensions, an extension before the Halloween deadline this year, is TJ Warren. If they see, you know, incredible improvement from him, considering he is the same position, plays the same position as Josh Jackson, if he comes in and he's been a kind of an up and down player, not somebody that probably that many Cavs fans have been keeping an eye on, but if he can add a shot, or, you know, come out of the gates playing better defense than he has, or just honestly with him, it's been a lot of that temperament factor, is just seeing a different side of that guy. If that happens, I could see them maybe looking a little harder and not seeing Jackson as somebody who's as valuable if they don't feel like they need a replacement at the three. That's the only other thing I could think of, because, I mean, that was the reaction with a lot of Suns fans who overvalue Warren or really like Warren, is why do we need Jackson if we already have this guy? But he hasn't proven himself to be that kind of pillar at the small forward position by any means. But if they see that from him, maybe that'll change things.
Yeah, I think that ends up right. Let's wrap it up on the last question here. Not asking you to say, no one should aggregate this, no one should source this. Just give me a shot in the dark. Are the Phoenix Suns the team that trades for Kyrie Irving?
I don't think so. But it's weird because I don't know who else would. And that's sort of where I'm at. I'm like, if the Cavs get desperate enough, that would be the way I see it happening. I think the Cavs crack before the Suns crack, if that makes any sense. I think the Suns are going to take... The things we're talking about with the Suns are pretty extreme situations where they'd bump down and go ahead and offer up Jackson. The idea of the Cavs, something happening on their end that makes them more desperate to pull the trigger, seems more likely to me. So maybe that's, if there's any team, I think it would be the Suns, but I think for some reason I'm more inclined to think that neither side budges.
That's kind of where I seem to. I think for the Suns deal to work, Jackson is the blue chipper they want. Because I just don't know if Bender, in their mind, quantifies as a blue chipper. I don't think Chris does either. We didn't really talk about him. I don't think we need to.
I think if you want a higher upside player, that's Bender. I don't know what Chris brings that really would excite the Cavs any more than any of these other players.
Yeah. And then I just keep thinking about this, and it's like, if their criteria is young player pick, veteran help, and you can, and like the Suns can offer all those things in different ways, I just don't know if it ends up being the level the Cavs want. And that's just kind of where I think, like, the Cavs may have to settle for Dragic, Winslow, or Bender pick, Bledsoe. What would you, if you were the Cavs, would you rather have the Miami deal or the Phoenix deal?
I think that if the Suns, let's just assume Jackson doesn't get included. Yeah, the deals we're talking that have been publicized as of right now, I think I like Winslow better than Bender. So just by that, the only thing that complicates it is what pick Miami would be able to offer, because the Suns have their pick. That's the pick that would be offered in the Suns deal. So Miami would be looking at, I don't even know. I don't know their pick situation, but they can't trade the 2019 pick, and they can't trade the 2020 pick because the Suns also have their 2021 pick. So that's the part that would be a little awkward on that side. But I think Winslow is a much better prospect as of right now than Bender. And he's basically what Jackson is already, or what Jackson could be, I mean.
Yeah, and he is not under control as long, but I think, like, he also, again, like how I said, I think he could fit right away. Brendan Kleen, writer at The Step Back and Bright Side of the Sun. Just give everyone a quick shout-out to where they can find your writing and where they can find you on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm at BrendanK14 on Twitter. Like Chris said, I'm on Bright Side of the Sun and The Step Back, also at True Hoop Network's Bourbon Street Shots Pelicans blog. So yeah, and all that NBA stuff and Twitter, probably the best place.
Yeah, go give him a follow. You'll enjoy his coverage, and he will, if the Cavs do, I'm going to ask you now, if the Cavs do make a deal with the Suns, I'm going to ask you back on to come do the show again.
Oh, for sure. We'll have plenty to talk about if that happens.
Yeah, if that happens, things got weird in a hurry. Because I have no idea when this actually could happen. But for myself, for Brendan, this has been today's Locked On Cavs. We'll be back either tomorrow or Thursday with a new show, depending on how recording works out. But hope you guys enjoyed this one. Check out yesterday's show. Check out the Facebook Live I did on the Cavs' New Jersey, which are okay. They're fine. But we'll talk to you again on the next episode of Locked On Cavs.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.